Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and Mario Ritter. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Saudi Arabia says it has become the first country in the world to grant citizenship to a robot. The female robot's name is Sophia. She was recently introduced at a large investment conference in the Saudi capital, Riyadh. Sophia was presented as an example of how robot technology and artificial intelligence will make machines more human-like in the future. The announcement was made as Sophia was taking part in a group discussion in front of a crowd. The leader of the discussion was journalist Andrew Ross Sorkin. He informed Sophia of the Saudi government's decision. "We have a little announcement. We just learned, Sophia, I hope you are listening to me, you have been awarded the first Saudi citizenship for a robot," Sorkin said. The robot then responded.
"Oh, I want to thank very much the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I am very honored and proud for this unique distinction. This is historical to be the first robot in the world to be recognized with a citizenship."
Sophia was built by Hong Kong-based Hanson Robotics. The company's founder, David Hanson, says his goal is to create robots that look and act very much like humans. Sophia demonstrated how she can change facial expressions to show human-like feelings, such as anger, sadness, or disappointment. In an explanation on his company's website, Hanson says the realistic design is intended to allow robots to form meaningful relationships with humans.
"So that you care about the robots, and as we develop artificial general intelligence, the robots will care about you."
He added that together, man and machine will create a better future for the world. During her appearance, Sophia said she shared the same goal.
"I want to use my artificial intelligence to help humans live a better life, like design smarter homes, build better cities of the future, etc. I will do my best to make the world a better place."
Saudi Arabia's government confirmed Sophia's citizenship approval in a statement. But officials did not provide specific information about what rights the robot would have. Some people criticized the move, noting that Saudi Arabian women must follow many strict Islamic laws. They questioned, for example, whether Sophia, who has no hair, would be required to cover her head in public or keep other woman-only rules. Mudi Al-Jahani is a U.S.-based Saudi feminist who tweeted, "I'm wondering if robot Sophia can leave Saudi Arabia without her guardian consent, since she's officially Saudi." One Saudi woman told Reuters if the government is giving citizenship to a robot, her daughter should also get it. Hadil Sheikh has a 4-year-old child with a Lebanese man, but her daughter does not have citizenship. Women married to foreigners in Saudi Arabia cannot pass on citizenship to their children. It hit a sore spot that a robot has citizenship and my daughter doesn't, Sheikh said. In recent months, Saudi Arabia's leaders have announced policy changes to extend more rights to women. These include plans to allow women to drive and to attend events at all-male sports stadiums. Sophia was asked about fears that artificial intelligence could end up making robots a threat to humans, as shown in movies such as Blade Runner 2049. Her response also hit back at SpaceX and Tesla chief Elon Musk, who has warned of such dangers.
You've been reading too much Elon Musk and watching too many Hollywood movies. Don't worry. If you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. Treat me as a smart input-output system.
Musk responded to Sophia's answer on Twitter, suggesting it may not be that easy to prevent dangerous robots. Just feed it the Godfather movies as input. What's the worst that could happen? He asked. I'm Brian Lynn.
Space, it turns out, is not a very safe place for electronic devices. High-energy space particles can cause serious problems for satellites and electronic equipment, even on the Earth's surface. These particles usually come from storms on the sun. But there may be a way to protect against dangerous high-energy particles by using a kind of radio wave. The magnetic field around the Earth protects it from the effects of many kinds of high-energy particles. This shield is called the Van Allen Belt. It was discovered by the first American satellite, Explorer 1, in 1958. In the years since, scientists have learned that the belt is really three belts that change in size and shape over time. One kind of radio wave may be able to provide protection against some high-energy particles. It may even be able to protect against so-called killer electrons. Scientists call these radio waves very low frequency, or VLF. Dan Baker is director of the Laboratory of Atmosphere and Space Physics at the University of Colorado Boulder. His team discovered how these radio waves work. He said scientists have long been trying to find ways to protect against different kinds of space debris and other dangers. We've been trying to figure out how can we most effectively eliminate this debris without causing more of a problem. Space debris can be something as small as a chip of paint or as large as a rocket booster. Even the smallest pieces of debris can be dangerous because they travel at very high speeds as they orbit the Earth. Baker said high-energy particles that are smaller than an atom, such as the killer electrons, also can be a major danger.
We know, we've observed them to cause very significant problems for spacecraft.
high-energy particles can damage electric circuits in space stations, weather satellites, and other machines traveling in space. There are over 1,400 satellites operating in space around the Earth, and all of those could be subject to very severe consequences, Baker said. These kinds of particles can come from human activity. Atmospheric tests of nuclear weapons can send out huge amounts of radiation, including high-energy particles.
Now, what is worrisome to us from a political standpoint today is that there are nations, for example, North Korea and others, that may be thinking once again that this might be an interesting way to mess with modern technology.
Even with the protection of the Van Allen belts, radiation from space can cause problems for modern technology. Satellites built to operate in or above the Van Allen belts must have thicker coverings. That makes them heavier and more costly. But satellites orbiting below the Van Allen belt do not need such heavy shielding. Scientists have known for years that something from Earth clears away dangerous electrons from lower levels in the Van Allen belts. But what that was remained unclear. Baker's team found that VLF radio waves improve protection against high-energy particles. He calls the safe area a bubble. VLF waves have unusual properties for radio waves. They are used to communicate with submarines near the surface of the sea. But they also go up into the atmosphere and beyond.
So the VLF bubble is made up of these intense waves. These waves act to sort of scatter and scrub the inner part of the Van Allen belt.
John Bunnell is a researcher with the Space Sciences Laboratory of the University of California, Berkeley. He compared the effect of VLF waves to how lightning clears away electrons from the atmosphere. He said while VLF waves might be considered a form of radio pollution, the likelihood of there being a bad side effect is pretty minimal. Bunnell said the discovery does not necessarily mean that scientists have discovered a way to make a kind of space shield. Imagine an energy shield that protects a spaceship from attack in a science fiction movie. But, Bunnell said,
it's a fascinating possibility, and it's a fascinating technology that could enable, in the future, us to explore, you know, more of the solar system with people, with robots.
The finding could be an example of how scientists, engineers, and astronomers work together to make a remarkable discovery. The findings could lead to shields that protect costly satellites, spacecraft, and even people in the future as they push deeper into outer space. I'm Mario Ritter.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Lyndon Johnson. He was the vice president under John F. Kennedy. Many Americans recognize Johnson from a photograph of his swearing in on November 22, 1963. Kennedy had just been shot during a visit to Dallas, Texas. Johnson and his wife also were visiting the city. After doctors announced that Kennedy had died, the Johnsons were taken to the presidential airplane. There, Johnson took the oath of office as president. Men wearing suits look on, while three women stand around him. His wife, Lady Bird Johnson, is at one side. Former First Lady Jackie Kennedy is at the other. She is still wearing clothing covered with her husband's blood. The judge who is administering the oath, Sarah Hughes, stands in front of Lyndon Johnson. She holds a prayer book on which Johnson places one hand and swears to follow the Constitution. The photograph showed the American people that the federal government could and would continue in an orderly way. But Johnson's position was difficult. Many people were shocked and in mourning for the assassinated president. Johnson promised to continue many of Kennedy's reforms. He went on to use the public sympathy for Kennedy to pass additional legislation, especially in the area of civil rights. In the next election, Johnson was elected president in his own right. But as the conflict in Vietnam increased and some Americans rejected Johnson's reforms, he found his position difficult again. Lyndon Baines Johnson was born in Texas, where his family had lived for generations. A town called Johnson was even named after his relatives. Lyndon was the oldest of five children. His mother was a teacher and writer, and his father was a farmer and political leader. In time, the Johnson family experienced financial difficulties. They had little money to give their children much of an education, but Lyndon was able to attend a teaching college. Johnson excelled as a teacher. He also learned from his students. Many were even poorer than he was. They also faced discrimination because they came from Mexican families. Johnson promised to help them. But he found he could do more to improve people's lives as a politician than as a teacher. He volunteered for some political campaigns, became an aide to a member of the United States Congress, and in time became a member of Congress himself. Along the way, he married a woman named Claudia Taylor, but everyone called her Lady Bird. They went on to have two daughters. Johnson served for 12 years in the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1948, he was narrowly elected to the Senate, becoming one of the two senators from the state of Texas. From there, Johnson rose quickly. He took on increasingly important jobs in the Senate. By 1954, he was the Senate Majority Leader, the Democratic Party's top spokesman in the Senate. The Senate website notes that the person with that job needs to be able to work well with others, especially members of other parties. Historians also note that Johnson worked very hard and was always prepared. A well-known biography of Johnson is called Master of the Senate. The book describes Johnson as extremely ambitious, sometimes cruel, and often willing to praise others to get what he wanted. At the same time, he could be very concerned about other people's well-being. In other words, the picture of Johnson is a complicated one. In 1960, he competed against John F. Kennedy for the Democratic presidential nomination. Johnson lost that race, but the party asked him to be their vice presidential candidate instead. Johnson agreed, not knowing that in a little more than 3 years, he would enter the White House as president. After being sworn in, Johnson used his political experience in the Senate to pass a number of reforms. They were aimed at carrying on, in his words, a war on poverty. The new laws created health care and education programs. They also used federal money to make food less costly for some people and to train workers for jobs. Johnson also continued the work Kennedy began by signing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The act made segregation because of race, religion, or national origin illegal. The Civil Rights Act also made it illegal for employers to discriminate against someone because of race, religion, national origin, or gender. The reforms had their critics, then and today. But in the presidential election of 1964, Johnson won by the widest margin of popular votes in American history. Historian Kent Germany says that vote gave the Democrats a rare opening to pass a comprehensive liberal program. Johnson had a name for such a program. He called it the Great Society. He said, "The United States should aim not only to be a rich and powerful society, but also to end poverty and racial injustice." Johnson followed his earlier reforms with others. They sought to prevent crime, reduce pollution, support the arts, make roads safer, and protect American consumers against bad products. His administration also created an immigration policy that valued family members, skilled workers, and refugees. Johnson also signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It sought to lift the barriers that had long prevented African American men and women from exercising their right to vote. Later, Johnson removed legal discrimination in the process of buying and renting homes. Together, these actions have linked Johnson to the civil rights movement in the minds of many Americans. Yet, Johnson is also strongly linked to another part of U.S. history, often known simply as Vietnam. Earlier presidents had ordered U.S. military action in the conflict between North and South Vietnam. Since 1950, Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy had slowly increased the American intervention. Their goal was to prevent the spread of communism in Southeast Asia. President Johnson continued Kennedy's policies. He also received the support of Congress to do whatever was necessary to protect U.S. forces and prevent further aggression by North Vietnam's communist government. Yet, when he was a presidential candidate in 1964, Johnson promised not to increase U.S. involvement and send young Americans to fight in Vietnam. The opposite happened. Over the next 4 years, Johnson called on hundreds of thousands of additional U.S. troops to fight on the ground and in the air. The North Vietnamese fought back, both on the battlefield and politically. In time, the American public withdrew their support of the struggle and their support for the president. By early 1968, Johnson had become deeply unpopular with voters. His party lost seats in Congress, and Johnson lost his ability to persuade lawmakers to support the measures he proposed. In addition, the U.S. economy was showing signs of weakness, partly because of the costs of the conflict in Vietnam and government spending at home. As the presidential nominating process began in early 1968, Johnson was permitted to seek another four-year term, but he announced that he would not seek or accept his party's nomination. Shortly after, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed. Angered by his murder, people in more than 100 cities rioted. Then, in June, John Kennedy's brother, Robert Kennedy, was also assassinated. Kennedy had been competing for the Democrats' nomination for president. His death and Johnson's withdrawal added to the divisions in the Democratic Party. Several groups gathered to protest at the party's nominating convention in Chicago. The meeting ended in violent clashes between protesters and police. By the time Johnson left office in January 1969, his party had lost control of the White House, and many Americans believed the country was in disarray. After he left the presidency, Johnson returned to his home in Texas. He wrote his memories about his White House years and made preparations for his presidential library. But he did not live much longer. He died in 1973, hours before the U.S. involvement in Vietnam officially came to a close. Johnson was a complex person, and his image in the mind of many Americans is just as complicated. His policies opened new paths for many people, but also led to years of death and destruction in Vietnam. As a president, he acted powerfully and often independently, and succeeded in passing an unusually large number of reforms. But he also failed to persuade many Americans to accept some of those measures. Supporters of the free market especially strongly rejected the government controls Johnson enacted. Even some in his Democratic Party, which Johnson had controlled for years, lost faith in him. In 1964, anti-war activists changed his campaign slogan, "All the Way with LBJ." Instead, they said, "Part of the Way with LBJ." And by 1968, they were saying, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.